Well, good morning, everyone. I'm delighted to welcome you to our session, celebrating and critically reflecting on 20 years of the spirit of 1848, passion, politics, and public health. I'm Nancy Krieger. I'm chair and one of the co-founders of the spirit of 1848, and it's really wonderful to mark this 20th anniversary with you at a session that we trust will feed your spirits with social justice and public health. And I warn you in advance, there's a surprise at the end, which I'm not saying what it will be, but it's an incentive to make sure that you definitely stay to the end. And as you can see on the slide, this is just but one of our 1848 sessions. We've already had quite a few already that have been quite wonderful. And I'll say a little bit more about the program after first giving you a sense of what you can expect in this session, because it runs a little differently than a standard scientific session, shall we say. Of course, we have a technical difficulty in the first moment. We've been playing with the slides. Okay. So I'll start with some very brief highlights of our 20-year history presented by several. Then we'll have several mentions from several members of our Spirit of 1848 Coordinating Committee, after which we're going to show the video winners and honorable mentions for our first ever Spirit of 1848 Award for Best Song, Chant, and Short Video Linking Social Justice and Public Health. We'll then have a five-minute excerpt from a video presentation featuring Winona LaDuke on climate change, public health, and indigenous peoples, which she prepared for 1848 session last year. And then all of us here will create our closings together by raising our voices together, singing for social justice and public health. So here I quickly note, in compliance with APHA rules, that none of us today have presenting on behalf of Spirit of 1848 have any financial conflicts to disclose. We don't have those kinds of finances. As for the rest of our Spirit of 1848, right after this session, we encourage you to visit our student poster session, which gives students, the next generation, a chance to showcase their projects linking social justice and public health. Their session starts at 12:30 and will be in Exhibition Hall BC. Look for session 4191. Then this evening from 6:30 to 8, we have what we call our Spirit of 1848 Business But Really Labor Meeting. We invite you to come to learn more about our caucus, also to get involved in planning for our sessions for next year, and you'll find us in room 225, which is a bit of a trek down in that direction, here at the Convention Center. And we'll also have some munchies available. Afterwards, starting at 8, is the Health Activist Dance, which we co-sponsor. It's organized by the Occupational Health and Safety Section, which is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year. And it's nearby at Lucy's Retired Surfer Bar, which does sound like an ideal place to be after the end of a long day. Also, our last session will be on Wednesday morning at 10:30, and it's the official PLM Parsons Memorial Session that we have co-organized since its inception with the Women's Caucus, Socialist Caucus, and Medical Care Section. This year, we're fortunate to have the PLM session be an APHA special session. The focus is on separate and unequal, the political geography of reproductive rights, reproductive justice, and reproductive health, and will take place at the Convention Center in the Rivergate Room at session 5093. Finally, we encourage you to join our 1848 listserv to become part of the active discussions and sharing of resources that we have regarding links between social justice and public health. If you are still old-fashioned and prefer pen and paper, there are sign-in books at the back of the room in which you can sign up, and we'll get your email address and add you to the listserv. But otherwise, you can just go to the website, click in, you can sign up now. There's the information that you need. And you can get it in digest form so that you're not overwhelmed by emails each day. We encourage you to sign up. It's a great way to share information, to find other colleagues that share the concerns that you have around social justice and public health, yes, in the United States, but also at this point in many other countries as well. We have thousands of subscribers. So to take you back to today's session, let me start by taking you back 20 years to 1994. When some of you younger members of our audience today, those in your 20s perhaps, were perhaps in preschool. And some of you who are older may have been thinking about your involvement when you were in your 20s in the social movements of the 1960s and 1970s. And still others of you somewhere in between, like me, who are in your 20s in the 1980s and engage in social justice work for the people's health in such diverse arenas as the anti-apartheid struggle, opposing U.S. proxy wars in Central America, mobilizing to confront the emerging HIV/AIDS epidemic while fighting for LGBT health and rights, taking on the backlash against abortion rights that was heating up then per the Hyde Amendment, which is still on the books and still prohibits the use of Medicaid funds for abortion, or fomenting the early days of the environmental justice movement named as such, newly linking issues of racism, class, and environmental health. The list could go on and on. Within that context, the spirit of 1848 can be traced to the National Health Commission of the Rainbow Coalition. Created when Jesse Jackson first ran for president in 1984, the commission was chaired by Vicente Navarro and co-chaired by June Jackson Christmas, two leaders in public health. A key role was to write policy papers and platforms for the Jackson campaign, including support for a single-payer universal national health program, and in my own case, my involvement was in 1988, writing the progressive platform to address the HIV-AIDS epidemic. The point of writing these policy papers was actually then very much to force the other candidates to have to respond and make their platforms a bit more progressive. We also organized sessions at APHA to publicize these positions and to gain support both for the campaign and the larger ideals for which it stood, with its vision of an inclusive rainbow coalition that could forge an agenda for social justice, including public health. Here's a taste of the politics of the time. So Allegra Gordon, who is one of our student reps, is going to be helping with getting the videos showing.
My privilege to stand
was the context in which the spirit of 1848 was born. And by around 1992, it became clear that the National Rainbow Coalition as an organization was moving into a new phase, and its National Health Commission ceased being active. Several of us who were involved with it, however, did not want to lose the gains created by having a rainbow approach to linking our work on social justice and public health. The upshot is that we decided to create a new group at APHA, one that would link issues across many concerns separately represented by the various progressive caucuses and sections at APHA, with an eye towards addressing gaps in the work as opposed to duplicating efforts, and also with a commitment to ensuring inclusion in our own ranks jointly and in relation to race, ethnicity, gender, sexuality, region of country, and within the context of most of us being public health professionals, a mix of private and public educational institutions and also government agencies. Accordingly, in 1994, we founded the Spirit of 1848 at the 122nd annual APHA meeting, which was held in Washington, D.C. We boldly announced our first public health meeting as a place to bring together politics, passion, and public health. Our goal then and now was to, quote, form a network concerned with social inequalities, end quote, and to create a place for those of us linking social injustice and public health, quote, to talk more with other people, working to understand and change how social divisions based on social class, race, ethnicity, gender, sexual identity, and age affect the public's health, end quote. From the start, we articulated our three foci as being, first, the social history of public health, to know where we come from. Second, the politics of public health data, to know what we analyze. And third, progressive pedagogy in public health, to teach and train the next generation and to train and build social movements. Indeed, our first two scientific sessions focus on what were then and remain critical issues in public health. One on data were about discrimination, a risk factor for health status, a look across the lines of color, class, gender, and sexual identity. And then the one was on social inequalities in health, measures and trends. And our founding meeting asked, how can we best advance work on and teaching about these and other issues so vital to health equity? And here we are 20 years later, having established a critical forum that remains true to our name, which was, as we explained in our original flyer, quote, captures our intentions. 1848 marks a high point in the early days of the worldwide public health movement and its links to other burgeoning movements for social justice, the anti-slavery movement, the women's rights movement, the trade union movement, the child welfare movement, and other political movements calling for social and economic democracy. 1848 invokes a spirit of optimism and commitment to social change that we can learn from and build on, and that can still serve to inspire us in our daily work, end quote. Suggesting, moreover, that our focus has been useful is the record of how people attending APHA have voted with their feet. Thus, ever since APHA started reporting attendance statistics back in 2002, we do like data, the spirit of 1848 caucus sessions, as compared to those organized by other APHA sections, FIGs, forums, and caucuses, have first ranked first in average attendance in all years except one, when we ranked second. Two, we have had the highest attendance in any given session in every year but two, except those 2 years we were once second and the other very close is third. And the third, the lowest attendance for our sessions has consistently far exceeded the highest attendance for virtually all other scientific sessions, except for the top-ranking sessions. We're proud of this work and how it speaks to the importance of what all of us here stand for, working ceaselessly with commitment and care to advance the work of social justice and public health. We have made gains. We have faced setbacks. And we fortunately have a new generation. Sorry, I've had colleagues that have died this year, and students that I am so glad to be training now. So we have made gains, we have set setbacks, we have fortunately a new generation to meet the challenges of our times. In their own ways and also those who have come before. The challenges are formidable, whether the global planetary emergency of climate change, which affects all of us everywhere, and also here in the U.S., the entrenched racism epitomized by mass incarceration, the recent killing of Mike Brown in Ferguson, and we all know we're waiting for the grand jury results, the growing assaults on abortion rights, the galloping growth of income inequality and corporate entitlement, and the continued evisceration of public services. But we are also seeing new and renewed coalitions to take on these myriad challenges. To keep us going, let us draw on our 20 years of the spirit of 1848 and to the spirit of justice, compassion, and solidarity that inspires us all. So now we're going to have several of our members of the Spirit of 1848 Coordinating Committee present very briefly. It's a true gift to work with all of them together as we do. Each one is going to give a brief 3-minute presentation highlighting the work of our different subcommittees over the past 20 years. Our presenters are, for the Social History of Public Health, Marion Moser-Jones, who's newly joined our Coordinating Committee. For the Politics of Public Health Data, Catherine Cubbin, who's been with us since the start. For Progressive Pedagogy, Lisa Moore, who likewise has been with us forever. And for the Student Poster Session, Allegra Gordon and Tabashir Saganondabari. I will wrap up then with highlights from our integrative sessions. So please, Marion.
Moment. And I'm honored to be here to be representing the historical subcommittee, and it's almost unique within this body that history is given and social history is given such a prominent place, and that means quite a lot to those of us who make our lives doing this. So first, I thought I'd answer the question that I had when I first, the tendrils of the listserv first reached me 10 years ago. Why 1848? Because that was the year that witnessed popular democratic uprisings in Berlin, Paris, Vienna, Rome, and a host of other cities, including, as well as a Sikh uprising in British India. And in the German states, while the revolution failed, this period of ferment yielded influential ideas. Namely, physician Rudolf Virchow proposed in his analysis of a typhus epidemic in Upper Silesia the novel idea that medicine is a social science and the science of human beings. How about that? And that social and political conditions caused the starvation that precipitated the epidemic. In his social autopsy of the epidemic, he found that the ideological stranglehold of the Catholic Church and the people made them passive and afraid, and centuries of forced labor under absentee landlords, as well as government neglect, prevented the people from being able to reliably sustain themselves. And this seminal work, which has been brought up by the founders of this 1848 caucus as something we can learn from today, and I'm, of course, talking about Anne Emanuel Byrne, who cannot be with us today, and some others, we have to look at the social and political context in which disease occurs, and specifically the grossly unequal power relationships that act as determinants of health. Or in the words of a tweet from an APA presentation yesterday on community resilience, quote, "Poverty is the hand around the throat of the community." There's some other important intellectual and public health milestones that happened around 1848, namely the Public Health Act in Britain and Friedrich Engels' publication of the conditions of the working class in England, a frank analysis of industrial capitalism's immiserating effect on the working people. As historian Ted Brown, an early participant in the Spirit of 1848's history activities, has noted, this caucus has provided a space within contemporary organized public health to recognize and celebrate and revive the contributions of Virchow, of Engels, of Henry Sigaris, and others. So why is 1848 still relevant today? Briefly, because the events of 1848 marked milestones in the period of popular awakening in Europe, India, and the Americas to the oppression of slaves, factory workers, women, people with mental illness, colonized peoples, and the urban poor. And these are the struggles that are still with us today. In a 1998 American Journal of Public Health article that Anne Emanuel co-authored with Nancy Krieger, and it's on the website. I urge you to read it. Anne Emanuel and Nancy wrote, "The historical imagination is midwife to transformation. Learning from those who have gone before and appreciating what we can now see that they could not encourages us to think critically in our own era. In so doing, we may resist the hubristic belief that as public health professionals, we have all the answers. This reminder is as relevant today as it was 20 years ago. As Nancy Krieger says in her emails to us, onward."
So I only have 3 minutes, but I want to start off with a little story. 20 years ago, when I was in graduate school, I was being advised by Elizabeth Fee. I'm sure many of you know Liz. And I was struggling with my dissertation topic, and she suggested that I write a note to Nancy. So I was a little nervous about that, and I wrote Nancy this little document, sent her. And my email was probably about, you know, this long. And within 24 hours, I got a two-page document, single-spaced, with, you know, all kinds of advice. And I really appreciate your commitment to mentoring students. And so just kind of a little funny story. But I'm going to talk about the politics of Public Health Data Committee. And so I've been a part of this committee for the last 17 of our 20 years. And it focuses on how and why we measure and study social inequalities in health. Demonstrating the interest of APHA members in these issues, our sessions have consistently had high attendance, often standing room only. From 1995 to 2013, 250 people on average have attended the data session each year, and we're very proud of that. In developing our ideas for our sessions during our labor meeting at APHA, we strive to take on timely themes and connect them to the overall theme of APHA, albeit with a critical lens. We are also conscious of developing panels that are diverse in terms of race and ethnicity and gender, and in representing local, national, and international perspectives. For the past 20 years at APHA, including yesterday's session, we have taken on a number of repeated topics. For example, in 1995, 2000, and 2014, we had presentations organized around the classification of race and ethnicity in data systems, including the U.S. Census. In 1996, 99, 2002, and 2008, our sessions included presentations on measuring and monitoring social inequalities in health, including new methodologies for doing so. We've had two sessions focusing on health and human rights, and other sessions organized around welfare repeal, neighborhood effects, discrimination, life course inequalities, and in 2013, climate change. We also held a special session at our 10-year anniversary in 2004 entitled Social Justice, Data, Discrimination, and Social Inequalities in Health, the First Decade of the Spirit of 1848. We like to have very long titles, where we had five-minute critical reflections from nine expert panelists on topics ranging from inadequacy of data on American Indian and Alaska Native health, discrimination, intersectionality, contextual analysis, and immigrant health, among other topics. It was attended by about 500 people, many of whom participated in a very lively Q&A. To conclude, we're very grateful to the dozens of excellent panelists we've had over the years and plan on continuing to provide progressive, critical reflections on data related to our most pressing and urgent public health matters. In this time of increasing income inequality and persistent discrimination based on class, race, gender, and immigrant and LGBT status, there is still much work to be done. Thank you.
I'm Lisa Moore, and I've come to talk about progressive pedagogy, even though I'm losing my voice. And before I do this, and I know she's never going to forget me, but she's been my friend for about 30 years, so she's going to have to put up with it. I want to explicitly acknowledge what this person here has done to keep this caucus going. So let's give it up. And she's one love to our blue, our sister, our colleague. And now I feel like crying because it's real. Okay, now I'm going to say what I actually came up here to say, if I can remember. That is that I feel like it's been a great privilege to work on progressive pedagogy for a couple of reasons. And I'm going to reference I'm going to poorly reference the work of Paulo Freire in order to explain why. The first is that Freire tells us that we are all teachers and all learners. And one of the things that we have been able to do in progressive pedagogy has been to be able to bring in all manner of teachers and all manner of learners. People from the community, people from different ages, people from different groups in our communities as teachers, so that we can learn from them. As well as some of those like us, like me, who are actually paid to teach. So that has been an extraordinary experience, and I feel like we've been very grateful to be able to do that. The other thing that Freire says is it's not enough to learn to read your world. You read your world so you can change your world. So to have the privilege of being able to be involved in explicitly learning how to teach so that people can read their world to make the changes that we need to see in it, to make the changes so that we all can have the healthy, good lives that we deserve, has indeed been a privilege, and one that I look forward to continuing with and to mentoring the next generation who are going to be doing this work. So I thank you all. And I thank the person in the hat.
Says training the next generation, but what we're really going to do is plug student involvement in the caucus and the student poster session. So the Spirit of 1848 student poster session is a bit younger than the caucus itself, though there's been student involvement throughout. The idea was born during the 2001 APHA meeting in Atlanta, and its explicit purpose was to provide an opportunity to learn from and support the next generation of progressive public health scholars and practitioners. The first session was held with three posters at the 2002 APHA meeting in Philadelphia, which also, as an aside, happens to be the first time I went to APHA and fell in love with public health, so correlation or causation, you can make the call. Since then, I'm pleased to say the caucus has held 12 sessions with 83 posters covering a wide range of topics. They've been presented by students coming from many different perspectives, disciplinary backgrounds, levels of training, including undergrads, masters, doctoral, medical, nursing students, and more. Here are just a few examples of posters presented over the years. Participatory Action Research as Feminist Methodology, a Case Study of Immigrant Latina Janitors' Health, presented by Runa Ray in 2003. Native Hawaiians in Health, Militarization or Justice, presented by Laurel Turbin in 2005. And Public Health and People with Disabilities, Where Are We and Where Do We Need to Go, presented by D.E. Neri in 2009. And that's just a taste of the amazing work that the caucus has supported.
Poster session is an opportunity for students to share their work linking social justice and public health from a historical, epidemiological, global, and or methodological perspective. It is often the first time for many students to share their results at a scientific conference, and for many it is their first time attending an APHA annual meeting. The poster session is an ideal forum for students. It can be less intimidating than an oral session. And not only do students gain the experience of presenting their work, the session provides them with the opportunity to meet other individuals passionate about social justice and public health. The students have the opportunity to expand on their research, to exchange ideas, and to gain feedback from students, researchers, and professionals from many various aspects of public health. This year's session represents students' diverse interests and includes work on food access for minority communities, the Everyday Discrimination Scale, South Korea's reformed anti-prostitution laws, and social urbanism as a vehicle to improve health equity in Colombia. I hope you'll be able to join us today at 12:30 in the exhibit hall and see the wonderful work that students are doing. And if you are a student, I hope you'll consider submitting an abstract for next year's session.
Finally, a few words on our Spirit of 1848 integrative session, of which this is one. Our first integrative session took place in 2002, and the idea literally was to have a session focused on one topic that would give us the chance to integrate the three foci of our caucus, which, as you have heard, are the social history of public health, the politics of public health data, and progressive pedagogy, and doing so with an eye towards building the next generation of public health folk who seek to link issues of social justice and public health. Our very first session in 2002 focused on Latin American social medicine and the quest for social justice and public health. We subsequently addressed in 2003 the politics of war and health, in 2004 social justice, urban planning, and the built environment, in 2005 harm reduction and conservative attempts to discount progressive evidence, and in 2006, social justice, human rights, and public health, from rhetoric to reality. In 2007, we were fortunate to be able to open our session to California Newsreel, who is here today, so that they could show as a work in progress some of the footage that became part of their award-winning documentary, Unnatural Causes, Is Inequality Making Us Sick? The session generated not only a lot of immediate constructive feedback, as I know you recall, not surprisingly the audience, such as you, was very happy to share opinions, but it also created wonderful connections that helped us with getting the word out about the series, which then aired nationally on TV in 2008. Next, true to our mission of keeping history alive, we followed up in 2008 with a mini extravaganza, 160 years of the spirit of 1848, critical reflection, celebration, and inspiration. That's a common theme, as you probably guessed, which was also an opportunity to bring together the many caucuses and sections with whom we are allied. And during the past 4 years, we've used our integrative sessions to bring out diverse critical perspectives to such important topics as indigenous methodologies and public health research in 2009, making social justice the foundation of public health, gaining ground and confronting co-optation. That was in 2010. Power, politics, and healthy communities in societal and ecologic context, from history and evidence to transformative knowledge for action in 2011. In 2012, embodying history and changing it, health inequity, social justice, and biology in context, the case of breast cancer. And lastly, last year, social justice and the politics of global climate change, governance, political economy, political ecology, and health equity, global, national, and indigenous perspectives. Considered together, then, our integrative sessions have not only integrated the different foci of our Spirit of 1848 caucus, but they have also helped us to integrate critical perspectives across a wide range of public health issues and their vital links to social justice. Attesting to the importance of engaged, live interaction, each year we have seen the people involved in our integrative sessions, the panelists, the people who vote with their feet like you to attend them, and those of us who organize them, not only forge new connections, but also gain inspiration. And as we all know, inspiration, drawing in breath, ideas, and energy is essential for continuing on and giving back in the lifelong work of building equitable, sustainable, and might I add, fun societies, in thriving ecosystems, and doing so aware of our debt to the past, all that we owe to all who have come before, and looking forward to a future in which all can live, love, ail, and die with our dignity intact, our humanity cherished, and our planet healthy. Let us keep alive the spirit of 1848. And now, time to share the winners and honorable mentions for our first ever Spirit of 1848 Award for Best Song, Chant, and Short Video Linking Social Justice and Public Health. Our thanks first go to California Newsreel, represented today by Rochelle Pullain, who stepped forward to donate the prize money. And yes, that's the very same California Newsreel who produced Unnatural Causes of Inequality Making Us Sick. And they were a part of the judges for the contest, which included those of us in the Spirit of 1848 Coordinating Committee, Leadership of California Newsreel, and Praxis Project, about which you'll hear a lot more in a moment. So, our winner, come up, for the best video goes to Yosef Moraes for his video, Lost in Translation. Yosef is a student, a community member, and a youth poet who is part of the Bigger Picture campaign, which is a collaboration between two groups. Youth Speaks, a San Francisco-based group whose mission resolves around identity, voice, power, imagination, and also the University of California San Francisco Center for Vulnerable Populations. These two groups have joined together to, in their words, quote, combat the rising epidemic of type 2 diabetes by empowering youth to change the conversation about disease and work to change the social and environmental factors that have led to its spread. And you will see that Yosef Moraes' video does precisely this. But first, your award, congratulations, and you can come up and say a few words, and Allegra will get the video ready to show. Please.
Buenos dias, everybody. It's okay, bilingual people. It's such an honor to be here, specifically showcasing this video, which is titled Lost in Translation, which it came from the collaboration with Youth Speaks in San Francisco. My main focus, my vehicle of expression is poetry, and what we realize with poetry and art, as it's a powerful tool for mobilizing specifically youth. And this poem, Lost in Translation, specifically written for youth like me who are of immigrant backgrounds. I think a lot of times when, specifically on this topic of food justice and health disparities, it's very seldom that we ask the community what is it that they need. A lot of times we have people coming into our communities telling us what is the solution, but a lot of times we are aware of what's happening. This specific video was written specifically thinking of my grandparents who migrated here. We're all undocumented in this country, and just thinking about food justice, and specifically in undocumented communities, I think that's one of the last priorities that we have in trying to survive in a country that's not very welcoming to us. So if anything, this youth, this video is a testament to that, to the resilience of immigrant people, to the resilience of undocumented people, and to the fact that even though, you know, legislations might criminalize us, we're still here and thriving in this country. So hopefully you enjoy it, and thank you so very much for this award.
I'm Rochelle Puna with California Newsreel, and Larry Edelman, the series creator and executive producer of both Unnatural Causes and our forthcoming series, The Raising of America, extends his hellos and would have loved to be able to join us here today. So we want to say, just first of all, thank you so much to the spirit of 1848, to Nancy, for really being one of the true champions of Unnatural Causes and of this forthcoming series as well. That really, as we know, we produce documentaries, but the way that they actually get used and change and make change in this world is when folks like all of you take them, show them, and use them, whether it's a 5-minute clip or the entire series. So we're really absolutely honored by the way the series has been used. And on a personal level, for me, it is such an honor to be here and so inspiring to be here today. We try with our films to really blend the science with heart, and today in this presentation and in this room, there is such heart and passion. And I'm amongst mentors and friends and colleagues. I was here as a student, now to be able to be here and present with you is wonderful. And what I also do, in addition to being at Newsreel, is to teach a documentary for health and social justice filmmaking class at San Francisco State that started in the health education department that now is housed in the Health Equity Institute. And so to be able to have this all come together in a blend of folks making films, making chants, and really bringing the heart to the work that we all do is really, it's inspirational, and I actually very much needed this where I am right now in career and life, and I'm sitting here going, that's right, that's why we do this. It's all the heart and the work behind the science and that we do. So thank you so much. Thank you for the amazing work that you've all done.
found in coke. We drink. And some of their instinct is harmless, but over the course of time, your body will adjust pounds of sugar. Azúcar. Cantaba la gran cerebro. It is ironic as though we are a festive people. Some of us move our hips lower to the rhythm just trying to catch our breath. These foods we trust to give us nourishment are slowly killing us. The sweet venom que corre por nuestras venas. And though they tell us to read the labels, how many of our abuelos will understand words that to the average American are impossible to pronounce? Abuelo sits back in his memories, tells of a time in which we ate from the land where the cocoa sold from trees and the mangoes were the only sweet our tongues were rejoiced in. How far we have come, from the origins of our land, our cuerpos lost in translation and our costumbres left to dry in deserts, our graves monopolized by corporations. Pero nosotros somos la respuesta. If you remember of a time in which the land was not fuzzy, we were scared. In which the harvest of vegetables called for celebration. Nosotros somos la respuesta. You remember nuestra lengua, nuestro idioma, nuestra tierra. It is time for us to return to the way of our ancestors.
You have a few followers for your videos. So what we're going to now do is have our three honorable mentions, and let me call up to the platform first Martine Hackett, who is the creator of Suburban Color Lines, Kanwarpal Dhaliwal, who's the director of community health and integrative practice of the RISE Center. She's appearing on behalf of the youth of the RISE Center in Richmond, California, who created the video Street Literature, working with the RISE Media Arts producer, Gamikia Henderson, and Nicole Reza, who is the director of social-based and youth education of Planned Parenthood in Los Angeles, under whose auspices a youth team in L.A. created the video You Down with LGBT. So first, a big welcome to all of you, and a moment for each of you to say words after I'm going to give you your honorable mentions. So please, each of you just want to say a moment about what your thoughts were, but just keep it short so we keep on time. We are always pressed for time. I'll give you your awards, your honorable mentions, and then we'll show each of your videos.
Everybody, thanks so much. I'm so honored as well to be able to be here. So my thoughts with my video, after seeing that one, it's a much more lower quality. It's really, and I mean that not to put myself down, but I mean that I used a flip camera that I shot outside of a moving car, and you'll see what that video looks like. But I was inspired. I moved to suburbia 4 years ago from New York City, and I was shocked to be able to see sort of the difference in suburbs that I saw similarly in the city, especially around residential segregation and the impacts of health. So I wanted to create a video that sort of captured that idea.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. I didn't realize when I was walking in I was actually going to be home. There's so many familiar faces, so many people who have raised me as a public health baby, and now I'm an adult, almost. So I'm here on behalf of our producer, Jamikia Henderson, who's a 20-year-old producer from Richmond, California. She just sneaked up on us and said, oh, by the way, I submitted this thing to this conference. I don't know if you ever heard of it. And she sends us the link, and we're like, are you for real? But this is we love it. And so I wanted to share just the story around the video that you're going to see, Street Literature. After the George Zimmerman verdict came out, we knew it was important to actually hold a circle up for our young people to really have a safe space to talk about how they were feeling, what they wanted to do, a safe space to vent their rage, their anger, their despair, and also to generate their ideas and to really, as I said, read their world to change it. So they've actually decided to video their world. So Jamikia was part of the circles. She came to us one day and she said, I had a dream last night. We have to make a video about this. And so she went at it, and you'll see the creation of that. I want to also just say one thing. I'm a descendant of that sick uprising in 1848, so definitely feel like I'm in the room and thankful for all the folks in and out of this room who have supported me to be here. I feel so blessed right now to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm really, truly humbled to be here and accept this honorable mention on behalf of the Planned Parenthood Los Angeles Peer Advocates. This is my first APHA conference, and I really feel like I am among great and amazing people who I want to get to know. So thank you. The peer advocates are trained over a year period with Planned Parenthood Los Angeles, and they're really resilient, amazing young people. And they created this video after a specific training around LGBT sensitivity in order to really change the conversation around sex education. So I'm humbled and honored, and thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
since the world we want has joy. And so next, what we're going to present is the song and chant, the honorable mention that was created by Pinky Tuscadero, who can't be with us today, but is very happy to share her work with all of you. And yes, her name is an alias in homage. The piece is This Is Democracy. It's a rap chant, and we'll play for you while displaying the words on the screen. To share about a 4-minute clip of the video that was features Winona LaDuke on climate change, public health, and indigenous peoples, which she made as part of a full presentation. It was about 20-odd minutes for one of our Spirit of 1848 sessions last year. Winona is founding director of the White Earth Land Recovering Project and is also executive director of Honor the Earth, a Native-led organization she established along with Indigo Girls, Amy Ray, and Emily Salyers in 1993 to address the two primary needs of the Native environmental movement, the need to break the geographic and political isolation of Native communities and the need to increase financial resources for organizing and change. Their current work focuses on opposing fracking and stopping the construction of both the Enbridge Sandpiper Pipeline, which would cut through the Anishinaabe lands where Winona and the White Earth Land Recovery Project are based, and also the Keystone XL Pipeline, we all know is highly in the news right now, which would extend from Alberta, Canada, to refineries in Texas. They're also opposing the expansion of the already built Alberta Clipper Pipeline, which cuts across the land and water of several North American Indian nations.
Change in our communities or in our society at large. populations living in areas of this industry. At the same time, reports of potential health problems continue to emerge. We feel it is premature to go forward with this. For all of these reasons, we are again calling for a moratorium of at least 10 years on the development of the shale gas industry, signed by the Sackville Memorial Hospital medical staff in the summer of 2015. In localized energy, we find efficiencies, we find houses that are better suited for resilience in the times of climate change. We find localized energy means that you control it yourself and you're not at prey to vagaries in the world of markets, nor are you at prey to climate change related disasters because you have solar panel on your house, or because you have solar thermal on your house, or because you have local wind. There is more than that, perhaps, the psychological, social, spiritual impact of having some control of your destiny. Everybody wants to control their destiny, and you have a much better chance of controlling your destiny if you control your food and energy systems, particularly in the times that are ahead of us, because the times that are ahead are going to be harder than the times we've been through now. This has been a blip in history where we've had a lot of fossil fuels and we've extracted them quickly. Now we're moving into more difficult times. And as indigenous nations look into the future, we're going to need to look at how we're going to survive. We need doctors on our side. We need doctors that stand for us, stand against extractive industries, stand against climate change, and help us work for preventative medicine and healthy communities for the future. You guys, thanks very much for listening to me. This is Winona Ledoux for On the Earth.
Organizing the way you're supposed to. So now for the final part of our program, building on the past and looking to the future that we collectively shape, working together for social justice and the people's health. So it's time to raise our voice in song, to lift our spirits, and to hear our shared resolve. In 1912, after the victory of the Lawrence Textile Mill Strike led by the industrial workers of the world, Ray Stannard Baker, who was a progressive U.S. journalist, a famed muckraker, published an article in which he commented on the inspiring use of song to keep the spirits, lift the spirits, unite and educate workers and community members, largely immigrants from many different European countries who spoke many different languages, and to do so about the strike issues and the broader subject struggle for social justice. His trenchant observation, quote, "Beware that movement," said a wise Frenchman, "which generates its own songs," end quote. So in that spirit, we're planning to have all of us sing three songs, which we're going to say a bit more about before we sing each of them. And the first is Step by Step, The Longest March. The second is Public Health Anthem. And the third is being premiered for the first time due to the incredible creativity and also generosity of Makani Themba, which you'll hear more about. We're being led in song by Makani, who's the executive director of the Praxis Project, an organization whose mission is to, quote, build healthy communities by transforming power relationships and structures that affect our lives. This year, the Makani and the Praxis Project helped co-organize and generally subsidize the three radical history tours that we hosted this past Sunday. So let's give her a very big thank you. And as she's coming up here, as we sing today, let us also honor the memory of Andrea Kidd Taylor. She was going to have been involved in our program helping leading with the singing. She passed away this past summer. Andrea was a powerful advocate for social justice and workers' health and environmental health, and also very much an active contributor to Spirit of 1848 sessions and a key ally for our caucus and other APHA caucuses when she served in the APHA executive board. Funds are being collected to set up an environmental health scholarship in Andrea's name at Morgan State University, where she taught. And we have a special tab on our 1848 website, which will be open until December 1st, where you can make a donation, and I'd encourage us to do so. So, the first song, Step by Step, it's a round based on words penned 150 years ago in the 1864 publication of the American Miners Association, which is a forerunner of the United Mine Workers. Makani.
Richard Hoff Richter, let me start calling people. Come on, come on.
Okay. So this is, what we're going to be singing is the public health anthem, and it's sung to the music of Sir Herbert Parry that he composed in 1916 for the verses of William Blake's revolutionary poem, Jerusalem. This poem, published in 1808, famously condemned England's dark satanic mills for sacrificing both workers and their environs, casualties Blake attributed to the unbridled capitalist quest for profit in the early days of the Industrial Revolution. In the mid-1990s, Alex Scott Samuel, who's a UK health activist and a very active contributor to our Spirit of 1848 listserv, wrote the public health anthem set to Parry's music. And we first sang that back in 1998 at our extravaganza to celebrate 150 years of the Spirit of 1848. So, Makani, all yours.
You'll know this. You'll know it. Heard this.
actually, she said, does chutzpah count? I said, absolutely.